Welcome to Going Beyond Medicine with Elaine Groman. Conversations with people who are working to make a difference in our world. Now here's your host for Going Beyond Medicine on Empower Radio, Elaine Groman.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Elaine Groman on Empower Radio. And of course, the show's name is Going Beyond Medicine. And the premise of this show is to bring people to the airways that are doing extraordinary things to help to make our world a better place. And my guest today in studio is one such woman who is a remarkable human being. Michelle Hunt is the author of Dreammakers, Innovating for the Greater Good, but has been a change agent and transformation catalyst in so many positions of leadership, both in the government and in business. And the thing that is so beautiful about Michelle is she brings her heart and her spirit and her mind and her emotions to everything that she does and helps us to remember our humanity. So welcome to the show, Michelle.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
It's so wonderful. So, you know, I don't even know where to start. There's so many things that you have done. Why don't you just start off with telling us a little bit about yourself, Michelle, if you would, please, so that we can start and see the transition of how you have become the woman that you are and the change agent that you are.
Okay, well, I definitely have to start with how I came into this world.
Yes.
And so I'm the most blessed person on the planet because my parents, Ted and Leona Hunt, were the greatest human beings I've ever met to date.
Oh my gosh.
They're what I call dream makers. So the whole concept of following a big, bold vision, positive vision that has a positive impact on people and the planet really originated because I was a student of dream makers, my parents. Mm-hmm. And they came from terrible settings. They came from the inner city of Detroit. And my dad was one of 12 kids in extreme poverty. My mom was the oldest of four, and her mother died taking in laundry and falling down the steps. Mm-hmm. And they were moved from foster home to foster home and family member to family member. But when they came together, they made a conscious decision to create, co-create a vision of how they wanted their family to be. And so they said, this is, you know, they had a discussion, a deliberate, conscious discussion about the family that they wanted to raise. And they also had some core values that they pledged to kind of guide their decisions and their behaviors. Mm-hmm. And so that genesis set me up for going on this exploration or this quest of finding out dream makers, shining a light on them, and working with them to change the world.
So, Michelle, what were those core values? Would you share those with us? Because I think that is so important that you were totally immersed in this dedicated choice, right, which is so beautiful,
right,
and a conscious decision to human beings before they created a family. They understood who they were and who they were to one another.
Yeah, and there were really three big ones, love being one. You always come from a position of love. Always behave from a position of love. Always speak from a position of love. I mean, Dad has a saying that, is it kind? Is it necessary? And if it's necessary, be kind. Mm. So it was love, community, huge one. Community is just huge. And that played out in that we never really lived alone as a family. Dad would bring home a woman that had just been battered, or a whole family that were homeless. I mean, as one would move out, another person in need would move in. So this whole sense of community, and that we're all connected, and we're all, you know, we're here for each other. And then the third one I all kind of spoke to is kindness. So it was love, community, and kindness are the three biggies.
That is so beautiful.
Yeah.
What an example.
Oh, yeah. No. And my father's job was to help desegregate military bases, the de facto segregation that was going on in the 50s and 60s.
And he was with the USO?
He was with the U.S. Air Force, but he had won worldwide seven times. He's an entertainer. He's a singer, Well, he's multi-talented. I don't know what he didn't do. He's passed now, but he ended up producing and being the master of ceremony of the major USO shows and integrated us into the show. My parents met in the USO. My mom was a dancer.
So for those who aren't familiar with the USO, because there's a lot of younger people realize that the USO, and I'm not even sure what it stood for, US, United States, I'm not sure what
I'm
it stood
either.
For, but it was bringing entertainers to the troops wherever they were globally to help bring morale, to bring a sense of home and family to where they were, and sometimes in very dangerous, isolated positions on the planet. And it was always, like, I remember there was Bob Hope was a big one.
Well, that's what I was going to say. We performed with Bob Hope, but he was... 5 or 6 times he was the guest producer of the show, the guest MC of the show.
So your dad was, his position was to bring in balance, right?
His technical position was he was over special services on the bases that we were stationed on in Alaska, Kentucky, Arizona, Panama. But we'd go on these goodwill tours with the USO. So USO wasn't traveling 12 months. You'd go on these USO tours around the world.
Right, right. So you entertained with them as well?
Yeah, I was a dancer.
Oh my gosh, how wonderful.
Yeah.
So that gave you, I would imagine, Michelle, and again, my guest is Michelle Hunt, and as an incredible transformation catalyst change agent in our world, that gave you a bird's eye view, if you will, to the challenges that people face in their own mind, in their own community,
absolutely,
in their families, in their way they think, but also in the organization within their which they're immersed in.
Right.
So, I would imagine that gave you such a an immediacy of understanding.
Yeah, it did. But I watched Dad. I mean, we were generally the first blacks to have housing because of the time. Mm-hmm. And they would, they took care of us because the job was so big. And we went, the places we actually lived in, there was racial conflict, and that's why he was sent there. Mm. And so I watched him become this huge catalyst to help transform the culture of the base. And he did that through the arts. He did that through, all of the arts and recreation, because he was over all arts and recreation, the motor pool, the bowling alley, the teen clubs, the officers' clubs, all of that stuff. And he utilized that by bringing people together, creating bands, creating choirs, creating leagues, sports leagues, all the sport. Once people start communicating with each other and playing with each other and laughing with each other and competing with each other,
then you get to know each other,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so I saw, I saw miracles happen. And for us, the three of us, the big challenge was school, because imagine being stationed in Kentucky in the mid-50s,
And it was yourself and you have two brothers, is that correct?
I have two older brothers, mm-hmm. right. And the kids, when we would leave for school, would lock their arms and sing every morning, "Tick tock, the game is locked, no niggers can play." And so it was a challenge for us. Mm. And you'd go to school and teachers in those days would call you nigger. The principal called you nigger. Cars just driving by. But my father got us up every morning individually and we'd have to go into the bathroom. And we'd have to stand there looking at ourselves and looking at him, looking at us, looking at ourselves in the mirror. And we'd have to say, "I'm healthy, I'm happy, I'm beautiful, I'm intelligent, I'm loving, I'm loved, and I'm wise," 7 times every morning.
Wow.
So that fortified us. And so, when you were confronted, you didn't feel hate or, he gave us a beautiful, positive vision of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'd come home, and Mom, I'd come home and I'd complain about all the things that happened, and her thing was always, "Mm-hmm, baby, okay, now what are you going to do about it?" So between those two things, personal responsibility, which is my mom's big thing, what are you going to do about it? And the positive vision, we were able to navigate through some tremendous obstacles, actually. Yeah.
How brilliant to have her children understand, well, you don't have to be a victim of anything. Even
exactly.
If you are.
Exactly.
You don't have to internalize it.
Exactly. Exactly.
And because unfortunately what people don't realize often is when they're seeing people that are willing to be name callers or all of those things, the problem lies in them.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Not in you.
Absolutely. And I think that's, you know, even when I work with corporations, I always work with the leader first, the leader first. And we spend a significant amount of time exploring his or her core values. Well, so, you know, and it doesn't matter what, on this quest that I've been on and I'm still on, it doesn't matter what the venue is. It's been really about how can we collectively liberate the human spirit.
That is so important, Michelle, especially in you and I, we've talked about this before, the need for this understanding that we are one species.
Oh, and it's so beautiful when it happens.
That's right.
You know, that's the thing. It's so beautiful when it happens because you see what people can create together, and
yes,
it's, you know, and how it touches them and how they transform and how they, then that transforms their families and that transforms their communities, you know, because they're internalizing these values of collaboration and love and, you know, co-creation and having the courage to dream big and then work with a group of people to transform that dream into reality. And you're talking about the prison.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you about that. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, I've had the opportunity just once to go and speak to a group of incarcerated young women.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember how powerful that was
mm-hmm.
for me. But I want to let people know that Michelle, my guest, Michelle Hunt, she began her career with the Michigan Department of Corrections as one of two female probation officers to supervise adult males
mm-hmm.
in the probation department of Detroit, Michigan, which must have been a huge obstacle and challenge, but opportunity.
Yeah.
What did you learn in that experience?
Well, I ended up staying nine years in the Department of Corrections, first the probation experience, and then running a halfway house for female offenders, and then being Michigan's first female deputy warden in a male prison over programs for rehabilitation, what we call treatment director. But the lessons were are the same. Doesn't matter what the venue is. I've discovered that people are extraordinary and capable of extraordinary things, you know, when the expectations are high and they're given the tools and liberated from the boxes we put them in.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, in prison, I couldn't liberate them literally, but figuratively, you can liberate them if you design the kind of environment where they can participate. So let's talk about the prison, because
yes,
I think
please.
That was the most profound experience for me. It was a brand new prison in Holland, Michigan, which is a very conservative area.
Oh, yes, yes.
And was more so then, and this was 1978.
Yeah.
And so we actually transformed the building and everything. It was an old monastery before.
Oh, my.
And mm-hmm. we made it into a, transformed the facility into a prison. There's a lot of community resistance for the prison being there. So we had this great opportunity to design something different. And so I had been the first female, first black in every job. And so when the governor and the director of the Department of Corrections approached me with this, I said, I'll do it, but the quid pro quo is you've got to give me room to experiment to create real treatment programs and see if we can really make a difference. And they were all for it. And so we put together something called a responsibility model, which was the more responsibility an inmate showed, the more opportunity they had to participate in the design of programs that affected them. Mm-hmm. So the young men, these were adult young men, were put in teams in collaboration with my treatment staff. So they were peers in the design process with the psychologist, the medical staff, the recreation staff, the religious services staff, the school, the principal and teachers, all of the programs for rehabilitation. The custody staff, because we had to have custody, it had to be full participation so everyone had shared ownership for this experiment. And then we recruited 159 community volunteers to bring their skills inside so that there wasn't so much resistance, and they and the inmates had some outside contact. And
brilliant idea.
Oh, it was amazing. So they co-created, for instance, on the school program, the inmates said, can we have a tutors program? Every single inmate had a tutor.
Wow.
Anyone that wanted one had, and that tutor was a community volunteer. So they brought their gifts in. They came up with, we need a friends program, because Western Michigan, a lot of inmates didn't get visitors, so everyone had a visitor, a friend program.
Yeah.
The recreation program was so robust that Holland invited us into all of their intramurals, but they'd have to come into the prison to play basketball. And of course, the prisoners always won.
And they were good athletes.
They had all that passion, built up energy. They were really good. Yeah. And so, I mean, it was just, I saw dream makers in the most unlikely places.
And I imagine that you helped to decrease recidivism.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, these young men were excited about life. They had never no one had ever had high expectations of them. No one had, that's a gross overstatement. I'm sure someone had, but they didn't come from the environments that were very supportive in any way, emotionally, economically, education-wise. We had 100% graduation from high school.
Oh, my goodness.
And we had to institute a two-year college program, and all we did is go down to the local community college, and they came in. You know, and we were accused of using taxpayers' money because some volunteers were teaching cross-country skiing in the yard. But they were bringing in their own equipment, and they were volunteering. So you saw all this energy released, and all this pride, and all this, you know, excitement, and the results. Beautiful programs.
Mm. So was your program, was it implemented in other areas?
No.
Oh.
No, yeah, you really have to have it in your heart to do that.
Yes.
You know, and you have to not believe that people are terrible. Yeah. And most people drawn into Michigan Department of Corrections are drawn for the power versus the purpose. Yeah.
Well, I'm sure you've seen the abuse of power, and you see those that really want to share true power, which
Absolutely.
Is true leadership, true self-responsibility.
Yeah, exactly.
So you stayed there for 9 years, you said.
I stayed in the Michigan Department of Corrections for 9 years. Mm. I stayed at the prison for 2.5. And then it started getting to me, and that's when I said, I've got to get out, because that environment, no matter how, you know, many exciting things we were doing, starts to get to you.
Sure.
And so I gave the private sector a chance, and I found a company in my backyard, which was really synchronistic, because I started doing my research, you know, because I didn't want to have to, you know, sacrifice my values. I wasn't going to. Mm-hmm. And being a baby boomer, I believed that all private sector made money over the backs of people. That was my orientation.
Yes.
And so I was very reluctant about going to the private sector.
Mm.
And I found this company, and I went in as an individual contributor, starting all over again, because they didn't value the public sector experience.
Okay.
And so I started, you know, as a professional individual.
Now, was that at Herman Miller?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you tell us about that?
Oh, my
because
God.
Because that was a big change for you, and a beautiful example.
Oh, that was my Camelot.
Mm-hmm. I love how you say that.
Yeah, that was my Camelot. Absolutely. So I was offered a job at a pharmaceutical company in Michigan, and it would have at least paid me close to what I was paying and given me some middle management responsibility. But I was, at the same time, I was interviewing at Herman Miller, and I was drawn to Herman Miller because the people that worked at Herman Miller that I'd run into, and somewhere in my social crowd, when they talked about Herman Miller, they'd light up, you know, and they talk about Herman Miller like I talk about my family.
So since this is a global radio show, mm-hmm. Let's let people know what Herman Miller is.
Sorry.
You know, that's okay.
At the time, it was a Fortune 300 company, a leader in innovations in global office furniture. We're probably best known for the open office system, you know, the cubicles that were innovated during the energy crisis in the 70s. But also the classical Eames collections, like the Eames lounge chair and the new Gucci table. So very, very functional and beautifully aesthetic furniture, office furniture, and environment.
Mm. So tell us about the environment that was so unique for Herman Miller.
Well, the reason that I took that huge cut and selected them was on my, it was nearly 14 interviews. And at the time, my suspicion kicked in that, oh, okay, I'm black and I'm female. You know, they're giving me, and I'm from the public sector, they're giving me a hard time. But later I realized everybody went through a plethora of interviews because they wanted the right culture fit.
Sure.
And the reason that I selected the company is because on the last interview, it was the day before Thanksgiving, and Max Dupree, the CEO, was in the plant there, the plant near the headquarters, and people were gathered around, and he talked about being thankful for everything. And, you know, I saw accountants standing next to housekeepers standing, and there wasn't that division of hierarchy. But the real thing was Max talked about love and trust, and that people are extraordinary, and that we want to be a place of realized potential. And then he got me right then and there.
Mm.
And when I went, within a couple of years, I was able to navigate my way to the top management team because, you know, those skills are transferable, and Max noticed it. So I became the corporate vice president for people.
I just underlined that because I thought that is such an extraordinary title.
Yeah.
The corporate vice president for people.
And the four, when he wrote it, would be italicized. And the F is capitalized. And he would remind me, you are not the corporate vice president for people. You are in the state of becoming the corporate vice president for people, because it took a while to understand the implications of that great responsibility. And the fundamentals, he said, people are not human resources. He said, facilities are resources. You know, our money is resources, these equipment, but people are the soul of this company.
How brilliant.
It was a beautiful experience, except that we grew exponentially and we didn't institutionalize our values. So we were hiring people from Xerox and IBM and all these places, and they were bringing their own values. And so by not having a systemized way to make sure that all of our decisions and actions and policies were rooted in our core values, we got out of whack.
How did you rectify that?
Well, there was a huge sense of urgency because we looked up and there were 350 companies eating our breakfast, lunch, and dinner. You know, they basically could make our products cheaper, faster, and better. And so Max Dupree then said, well, let's transform the whole company. And he locked us away in our little hotel.
Five people, right?
Yep. It was the top management, you know, the senior vice president over sales and marketing, over R&D, over the CFO, and he said, come up with a vision.
Mm.
We came back very excited. We thought we had a vision, but it was, you know, market share, profitability, all of those really things that didn't get you up in the morning. And he said, fine, now design a process to bounce that through everyone in leadership and management worldwide. We did, and it came back greater and better because they were closer to the product, closer to the customer, closer to the communities, closer to the employees. And then he said, fine, now I want it to be bounced to every person in the company in teams, in their natural teams worldwide.
What a huge job.
It was amazing. So they came back with the major theme was, we want to be a reference point for quality and excellence by any measure.
Beautiful. We're going to continue our conversation in just a minute. We're going to take a quick break. My guest today is Michelle Hunt, and she is the author of Dreammakers, Innovating for the Greater Good. We're going to talk about that because that is such an important process that we need right now. I'm Elaine Grohman. This is Going Beyond Medicine on Empower Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
Listening to Empower Radio, an entire radio station devoted to your personal development, expanding your conscious awareness, and empowering positive change. Meet our hosts and listen online at empowerradio.com, on iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Stitcher Radio, or iTunes, or download the Empower Radio app for your smartphone or tablet. It's free in the App Store, and it lets you listen to our shows and podcasts on demand. Empowering people, empowering change. Empower Radio, online at empowerradio.com.
This is a test to find out if you know it all when it comes to children. Time starts now. Name one of the leading killers of U.S. children age 1 to 13. What's the best way to protect children in a car crash? At what age and size should a child start using a booster seat? Where can you find the answers to these questions?
Car crashes are one of the leading killers of U.S. children. Many of those deaths could be prevented by making sure that kids are in the right seat for their age and size. Don't assume you know it all when it comes to car seats for your child. Go to safercar.gov/the right seat and know for sure. That's safercar.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
You're struggling with your mortgage. You think about it. You don't do anything but think about it.
What are we going to do if we lose the house? Where are we going to go?
At work.
I can't let anybody find out. I'm so embarrassed.
At dinner.
How can I tell the kids? It's going to wreck their lives.
And at 3 o'clock in the morning.
I don't know what to do. I don't know how to get through this. What's going to happen to us?
It's time to stop thinking. It's time to start dialing. Call 1-888-995-HOPE for a free government program that offers expert one-on-one advice about your mortgage options.
I'm all alone.
No, you're not. We've helped over a million homeowners, and we want to help you. And now there are more ways to help. Call 1-888-995-HOPE or visit makinghomeaffordable.gov.
Brought to Today you might be the day I drop out of school. But you might be able to stop me. With United Way, you could tutor me, be my mentor, or volunteer to just read with me. There are tons of ways people like you can help kids like me stay in school. Make me a success, not a statistic.
Take the pledge to volunteer now at unitedway.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Positive radio for a better life. Thank you for listening to Empower Radio.
Now back to Elaine Grohman and Going Beyond Medicine on Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Good afternoon and welcome back to the show. This is Elaine Grohman on Going Beyond Medicine, and my guest today is Michelle Hunt. And I just want to let you know a little bit. In 1992, Michelle was appointed by President Bill Clinton to serve on his transition team. And in 1993, she was appointed by the president to serve as the director of the Federal Quality Institute, which was a resource center for a bipartisan initiative to reinvent government, really, essentially. And you were your boss was Vice President Gore, as
Absolutely.
You had mentioned.
Great man.
What an opportunity to see on such a huge scale how things need to be changed. Can you speak about that, please?
I will. Can I just say, give the results of Herman Miller's edition?
Yes, please.
Because
thank
you. It really is
thank
how
you for
I
reminding
ended
me.
Up at, by the president fell in love with Herman Miller because we received all this media attention for how we transformed
yes,
the company.
Yes, please. Thank you.
So the results of 100% participation, authentic participation by everyone in the company in co-creating the vision, which, as I said, was we wanted to be a reference point for quality and excellence by any measure. Then he said, let's do the values. What kind of values would we have to institutionalize? And then we did that W process again by bouncing it through everyone. And they came up with 7 values, and they were very inclusive. You know, I mean, from the way we do work is participation and teamwork. We value uniqueness. That was our diversity thing. I mean, but we said uniqueness means everyone brings their whole self. You know, if they're an artist at home, tell us you're an artist at home. So it wasn't just, you know, the government classifications of diversity. It was bringing your whole self. Family, social, and environmental responsibility. Now, that's a big one because the teams that came up with that came up with a metaphor of a Herman Miller red truck, and so that we could all be reminded that if an 8-year-old child sees a red Herman Miller truck, it gives them a feeling of quality and excellence. Now imagine how that translates into changing and aligning your policies, behaviors, and decisions. We couldn't spew stuff into the environment anymore. We couldn't overwork their parents so that they couldn't go to their child's soccer game or play. You know, so all of these things had corporate consequences.
Yes.
That were, and so we designed and we changed and aligned everything.
Oh, brilliant.
You know, if you were, for instance, if you had to go to Singapore, we brought you home on the weekend or we took your family to you. There was a family travel fund.
Wow.
I mean, it was just absolutely remarkable. We were so the results were, we became the best company in America to work for, the number one company for women, the number one company for working mothers. We won numerous environmentally responsible. We were the most environmentally responsible company in the world, best managed company in the world by the Bertelsmann Foundation. We, Business Week, best products, because naturally this translates into the quality and excellence of your product.
That's
because
right.
of the pride of the people.
Mm-hmm.
The best, we had 2 stock splits in 3 years. So it ended up by being every measure. So we ended up in Fortune's Most Admired for 7 years in a row, Business Week Best Products. So it was Camelot.
So it's not just about making money. It's about doing good.
It's making money by doing good.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's
It's not those. And so anyway, President Clinton fell in love with the company. And one of his major initiatives was the whole reinventing government, a government that works better and costs less, so a customer-focused government.
Mm.
And I did see some beautiful successes there. The Food and Drug Administration, wonderful scientists and medical folks on the leadership team there, but they had an old mission of safe drugs to the American public. That was it, period. And so they were holding drugs until they were just absolutely safe, but at the same time, the proliferation of the HIV virus and people were dying at alarming rates of AIDS. And so we got together and said, you know, what should the mission and vision be? And all they did was change 2 words. Oh, plus they were, pharmaceutical companies were testing the drugs by sending them to different countries because it was safe drugs to the American people. They changed 2 words, safe drugs to the public, comma, quickly.
Wow.
And so then they changed and aligned everything, their systems, their processes, their structures, their decision-making, all of that so that they collaborated with the pharmaceuticals. Might have gone too far. I think it's gone too far. But and so they worked in concert rather than you work for, you know, testing a drug, and then you bring it to the government, and the government says, start over again. The average time from the time a cure was developed to the time it was released to the market was 13 years because of that obsolete.
And how many deaths occurred or trauma?
And for the HIV drugs, that they cut it to 9 months.
Wow.
From 13 years. NASA was a great example too. They reinvented themselves. So I saw, you know, people who were more disillusioned than prisoners when we started this. They were just so mistreated by everybody.
And they
really were good people caught in a bad system.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were able to let them help, same as Herman Miller, every one of those agencies engaged all of their same process, all of their people in co-creating the vision, revisiting the mission, co-creating the vision, and then liberating people to work in teams to change and align everything to serve the mission, vision, and values. Yeah. And again, it's fail-proof when you really authentically do it.
That's right. Wow. So that then brought you, when you left working for the government, to be back in industry, or different kinds of industry, right, in private sector?
Well, I decided, you know, to walk my own talk, I needed to pursue my own dream.
Yes.
And so then I launched Dreammakers.
So tell us about that. Obviously, you have this beautiful book, which I absolutely love.
Thank you.
Dreammakers, Innovating for the Greater Good. So obviously, you've lived this. You've lived this. This is not some philosophy that you're trying to corral in. This is a lifelong way of being.
Why wouldn't it be when I see it works?
That's right.
And I see the benefits of it on every level, emotionally, psychologically, spiritually. I mean, you see people blossom and then flourish.
Yes.
And you see them individually and collectively do that. And then the results are the creation of something wonderful. There, it's a win-win-win.
So tell us about the work that you're doing now.
So, I've been doing it since 95 when I launched my business because it was just time. I worked with IBM, Motorola, a Swiss reinsurance company, Broken Hill Properties of Australia, but it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. I was brought in when they wanted to transform their company, and I worked with them to design a process. The footprint of the process is the fundamentals was the Herman Miller process. Mm-hmm. But of course, you don't implant a process in any environment. You engage the people in helping design that process so that it's theirs.
Yeah.
And it considers their culture. But the core was the same, you know, participation and teamwork and complete inclusion of all the people in making the changes happen, in creating the vision, creating the values, and then putting them in teams. The teams were cross-functional, cross-level teams.
That is so important, isn't it?
Oh,
you know,
God,
so that there's not the hierarchy talking down to the supposed underlings.
That was the biggest challenge. It was us. You know, we found the enemy, and it was us, the seven of us on the top management team.
Mm.
So Max and the president, and then the five of us that were operational or staff. And we had to learn that leadership is a function, not a status.
That's
and
brilliant.
That made a huge difference. Max Dupree commissioned Hauser, the indigenous American Indian, to create a sculpture in the courtyard of headquarters, and it was of a water carrier.
Mm.
And it's to remind us all that our job in leadership is to carry the water to the people, to nurture them so that they can serve the mission, vision, and values. They don't serve us. We collectively are serving the mission, vision, and values. And he put a miniature one outside his office, the CEO office, so that every time he walked into that office, it was a reminder of what his role is.
And everything that we have is a gift to us.
Oh my
Water
God.
Is a gift to us.
Yes.
The environment is a gift to
yes.
us. It's not something we own.
Oh my goodness. They were environmentally responsible in the 50s.
Mm. Wow.
The founder, Max's father, said that, you know, our facilities should be in harmony with the environment.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just amazing. Like I said, it was Camelot. So, you know, I would come in and as a catalyst and engage, help the leadership to engage the people in creating the kind of company they wanted, but as long as it was in alignment with my values. So I wouldn't do it for a company that wasn't in alignment with those core values about mm-hmm. people and the environment.
So tell us the kinds of people that you're working with now, and tell us, if you would please, Michelle, and again, my guest is Michelle Hunt, please tell us what you see is happening and what needs to happen now, because mm-hmm. even though it seems, and I often talk to people about this, is even though this appears to be such a toxic environment, and it is, we have to see what is not working. We absolutely, it has to be completely visible, and it's being made visible. So we cannot say, gee, I didn't know,
right.
or gee, I'm not responsible for that. Oh, right. Yes, we all are.
Right.
So please tell us about your thoughts about that.
A lot of the work is on a, I'm on the advisory board of the Fowler Center for Business as an Agent of World Benefit. So that basically is what it says. It uses the Paris Agreement, the global goals, the global sustainable goals, as kind of a North Star for businesses to understand that businesses can be very profitable by being good.
Yes.
And in fact, and the challenges we have today are so humongous that it takes the resources and innovations from business to come up with solutions for energy, for you know, environment, for even poverty and stuff like that. So we have to change the mindset.
Yes.
That you can't make money out of coming up with solutions to solve these seemingly intractable problems.
Yes.
Listen, I know it seems like it's not happening, but it is.
Oh, it is happening.
It's a huge movement. The B corporations, that's the benefit corporations. I mean, these leaders and their people are committed to business as a force for good. Now, they've got, as in that network alone, like 3,000 plus companies.
Yes.
Business as an Agent of World Benefit, we grew out of the UN Global Compact, which was a collaboration between civil society leaders and the business leaders that Kofi Annan, the Secretary Kofi Annan, had called for businesses to come together with civil society to address these huge problems. And yeah. So then a group was pulled together called the Compact, and then the Fowler Center grew out of that, so we come together every other year and learn from one another how to advance this concept of business as a force for good, business as an agent of world benefit. And then the other thing is that I'm deeply involved in is something called appreciative inquiry. So I'm on the advisory board of the Stiller. Bob Stiller was the founder of Green Mountain Coffee and the CEO, and he funded this initiative called the David Cooper Ryder Center for Appreciative Inquiry. Appreciative inquiry is living your life and your companies and your in organizations by asking appreciative questions.
Define an appreciative question,
strength-based
please.
Questions. You're living in a state of appreciation. Mm. So it's really the same process we used at Herman Miller. We just didn't have the same name. So, you know, what do we want to do together? What do we want to celebrate? You know, a lot of times when you bring in a consulting company, they look at what's wrong.
And it's crash and burn. I mean, slash and burn.
It's terrible. It's terrible. You're focusing on the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. First, you look at what do we want to become?
Yeah.
And then you look at, okay, if that's who we want to be, and the values define how we want to behave, treat each other in the environment, then you look at current reality and you say, okay, what in our history and our present do we want to celebrate? and preserve. Mm-hmm. And then what do we need to change and how do we do it? And you engage the people. You don't do the slash and burn. It's stupid.
Yeah. But you see it so often.
Oh, yeah.
I know it. I just saw it with a friend of mine.
But it's not sustainable.
Yeah. No, it's not, because it devastates people's lives and people have worked so hard in so many ways. And all of a sudden they feel totally unappreciated. And when they leave, where do they go? First of all, they're emotionally and spiritually and psychically fragmented and economically often.
It's terrible.
It's terrible.
And the companies don't benefit.
No.
They benefit very short term.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not sustainable because, you know, people are customers and your greatest PR is your employees and
exactly.
your communities, and they're part of families and they're part of communities. And those are the people doing the buying decisions. And over the long run, it's just self-destructive.
Yeah, and nothing will destroy a company or a relationship faster than bad PR or just the assumption that someone is being mistreated.
That's right.
Even
that's
if they're not. I mean, so you
right.
want to be above board all the time.
That's right. So, yeah. So I'm engaged in that.
So please tell us, Michelle, about the book, Dreammaker, Innovation for the Greater Good. And you said this is your third book, and this just came out in 2018?
2017.
Excuse me.
End of last year, yes. All of the books and the documentary is basically I go around the world and seek and discover, find companies and organizations that are leading with a big, huge vision that makes a difference in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And they had that vision. They made that vision come true, generally against tremendous obstacles, and they are flourishing. So by shining a light on that, then I can show people it's possible.
And how to do it.
And how to do it, because I use the same 7 questions in every book and in the documentary. You know, what was your vision? What were the core values? What were the defining moments in your life that brought you to? What were your challenges and obstacles? You know, what's your message to people and particularly the youth, and how did that impact your life personally? So by doing that, I end up, well, you end up talking to the same person, whether it's a CEO or in the book, there's junior enterprises. That's 50,000 millennials who are running enterprises that are social businesses that do well by doing good.
Mm-hmm.
And they're millennials, but they form this network, global network, and because they want to change the way business is, you know, this younger generation is really more beautiful than they're given credit.
Oh, absolutely. They're so innovative.
Oh,
and
my
they understand how to be collaborative, and they're not going to take any nonsense.
And they're not going to,
they're looking at what is.
They understand that the environment is sacred, and
that's
they
right.
understand that relationships are sacred, people are sacred. So, so I speak at and mentor some of their programs. But they are from 50 countries, and they're 50,000 young people.
Isn't that beautiful?
And they're building windmills and using engineering skills to do stuff like that for the environment and for communities.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
mm-hmm.
amazing. There's a guy in the book who created the wind tree. And so instead of the big windmills, which are better than gas, but they hurt birds and the environment in their own way, he created a tree, a wind tree, that the leaves are the turbines. It's amazing. It's if you just
following
Google
nature,
it,
following yeah, nature,
exactly.
And so, isn't that the brilliant
it's
way?
It's a mimicking nature. Yeah.
Wow. How? And, I mean, nature has the answers.
That's right.
Nature knows how to deal with it. If you have a problem, it has a solution to the problem.
Without question.
And always, always, always is offering life, and getting rid of what is spent.
That's right. So there's a company in Ann Arbor. It's not just around the world. It's called Menlo Innovations.
Yeah.
And their business proposition is joy.
I saw that, and I thought, isn't that interesting that they call it Menlo, because that was Thomas Edison's.
That was Menlo. Thomas Edison's, yeah.
Yeah, Menlo Park.
He's like been guided by Thomas Edison since he was a child. Yeah, Rich Sheridan, a phenomenal leader. There's a group of young black men in Cleveland who all went their separate ways. You know, they were childhood friends, and they all went their separate ways. A couple of them moved to Israel, moved to Atlanta, but then they came back together in their 50s, and they purchased this place called the Forgotten Triangle, and it was a terrible inner city neighborhood, and it's just terrible in every way possible. There are dumps and all of that stuff. So they purchased it, revitalized it, and it's an urban agriculture now. Because you know, in the inner city of Cleveland, like the inner city of Detroit, there aren't grocery stores where you can get fresh produce. So they are not only growing, you know, fresh produce and trees and all of that, fruit trees and all of that, and fish. They do aquaponics as well, but they have a school,
and they're teaching health,
and they're teaching people to have home gardens. Mm-hmm. But they're also teaching anyone who wants to learn what they, because this is a huge success. We're talking about acres and acres and acres. And so they're emulating these all over the country. And so they're going in and taking that prototype to others.
Oh, beautiful.
So that's what we need to shine a light. Yes. First of all, we need to help people understand that they are extraordinary, that they have this phenomenal divine power inside of them. And that's really what it boils down to. It boils down to the fact that we are divine.
We are divine.
We are divine. And when that's why I started with liberating the human spirit, which is Max's. I stole that from Max Dupree. Mm-hmm. Because when you realize that the power inside of you, and then you share that, you liberate that inside of you first.
Yes.
You know, you got to do that work. And then collectively, you find people who share a vision with you, and they want to do something, you can do it. Miracles happen.
Yes. And as you were mentioning, you know, there's so many organizations now that are trying to do global good, and there's a lot of what they call impact investors. So people that have their foundations or their private family organizations, philanthropists that have enough money, that have more than enough money, and now they want to do global good.
Exactly.
With that money.
Yeah.
And I think so many people have this fear of money and how am I going to fund it and all of this stuff. So I think when we can align people with people that say, well, here are the resources. You have the idea. You have the manpower. You have the drive and the love for it. Here's some funding to do it. Gosh.
Yeah.
That's possible. That's right.
But also you can make the money.
Yeah.
See, and that's, we usually wait for someone to help us out. That's where if you get a collection of people, you can be highly innovative and figure out how to
make
do
money.
Well by doing good.
Mm-hmm.
Do good by doing well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's...
So again, my extraordinary guest is Michelle Hunt. And please know that you can take a look at her website, which is www.dreammakers.org, dreammakers.org. And you could also reach her on her email, which is Michelle, M-I-C-H-E-L-E, so just one L, mariehunt@gmail.com. And she has a wonderful Facebook page, Dream Makers Michelle Hunt. So what brings you joy every day?
This. I've been living my passion since I've been put on this earth. And that's because I was shepherded by my Dreammaker parents. So yeah, this, and being alive right now and being able to have this experience and participate in it, because I know it looks messy,
mm-hmm.
but it looks fatal and all the conflict, but please know all of that had to happen.
Yes.
For it's like tilling the earth,
mm-hmm.
you know, and before we can break through with the new world, it is happening. It is happening, and it's going to break through and blossom. And then it's our job to help it, to nurture it, and then help them create, co-create a flourishing world.
And in the last few minutes that we have, Michelle, can I ask you about your role that you see with women in leadership?
Yeah, well, that it's the same role. I think it's time for women to blossom and flourish.
Yes.
And everything that, in almost every society, its greater system is not designed for that, for women to first have develop the self-esteem and self-love, and then to put that love to work. It will not, the only way we're going to transform this world is if women, if we begin to blossom ourselves.
Within ourselves.
And
yes.
Understand that we are goddesses. We are living goddesses, and it's our time to really begin to lend our gifts, and it's not going to be easy.
Yes, and as you said, is it kind? Is it necessary?
And if
it is necessary, make it kind.
Make it kind.
Because that is what we have the ability to do as women, is to bring people together, sometimes to be a little tough.
Tough love, nothing's wrong with
that. That's right, because it's honor. It's honoring the real person.
Right. I mean, those two women in the elevator with Senator Flake, that was who caught him in the elevator and confronted him and was sharing their
personal experience
of being abused.
Yeah.
That was amazing, because that was authentic.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and it was, and I'm not talking about being confronted as much as I'm talking about being
a truth teller.
A truth teller.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Michelle, our time is up already. It just whizzes by. My guest today has been the extraordinary Michelle Hunt. Please take a look at the work that she's doing globally at dreammakers.org. Thank you for being a living example of love and light and beauty and joy and integrity.
Thank you for inviting me to share my journey.
Thank you. This is Elaine Grohman on Going Beyond Medicine on Empower Radio. Yes, you are empowered to be the extraordinary human being that you were born to be in this extraordinary time on this planet. She needs you. We need you. We need ourselves. Thank you. Have a great day.